Very often philosophers can talk about thought experiments or in very abstract terms, but the real world is actually much more complicated than the world that philosophers often like to think about. A real world problem is different in all kinds of ways from a thought experiment. The first way, perhaps most obviously, is all real world problems arise in a context and within a certain history. There's often a very deep set of questions, an important set of questions that we need to think about as philosophers about, well, how do you go from the simple case where things are clear to the real world case?
Runaway trolleys, violinists, utility monsters. In my view, ethical thought experiments are rarely persuasive, clarifying, decisive, or even relevant. They also don't seem to help those who are really in the trenches. How does musing over a violinist help clinicians who are working in the very messy real world? I mean, isn't moral philosophy a bit more relevant to our lives than other areas of philosophy? I like to talk about consciousness, but I do that for its own sake. I'm not under a delusion that philosophy of mind has the same weight as deciding the legal status of abortion. The voice you heard at the beginning was James Wilson, a critic of ethical thought experiments, and here's Wilson on the famous violinist thought experiment. Quote, "From the perspective of philosophers, the point is clear, even if the author's conclusion is controversial. In the few instances I tried to use this thought experiment in teaching ethics to clinicians, they mostly found it a bad and confusing example. Their problem is that they know too much. For them, the example is physiologically and institutionally implausible, and problematically vague in relevant details of what happened and how. Moreover, clinicians find this thought experiment bizarre in its complete lack of attention to other plausible real-world alternatives, such as dialysis or transplant. As a result, excellent clinicians might fail to even see the analogy with pregnancy, let alone find it helpful in their ethical reasoning about abortion." End quote. Philosophers at this point are likely tempted to think that they're just smarter than all these thick doctors who can't seem to follow the stipulations of the thought experiment. But keep in mind, these particular clinicians Wilson is telling us about are experts in this area. It'd be like an expert in foreign policy, say on the Israel-Palestine conflict, trying and failing to tell a philosophy student that their thought experiment, intended to clarify the situation, actually muddies the waters in a way that's totally unhelpful. The more knowledge one possesses on a given subject, the less value thought experiments tend to have. The problem with these hypotheticals is precisely what moral philosophers like about them. They are idealized and oversimplified versions of the world. They're nearly always presented context-free, but real-world scenarios always come to us in a context. Thought experiments are additionally presented with details about future consequences that we simply would not have in real life. The end result is a scenario vastly different from the ordinary scenarios in which our ethical sensibilities are actually formed and exercised. Wilson makes another good point about ethically relevant features of a situation. Quote, "Faced with people who don't get a thought experiment, the temptation for philosophers is to say that these people aren't sufficiently good at isolating what is ethically relevant. Obviously, such a response risks being self-serving and tends to gloss over an important question. What are the ethically relevant features of a situation? Why, for example, should a philosopher sitting in an armchair be in a better position to determine the ethically relevant features of the violinist than someone who's worked with thousands of patients?" End quote. In thought experiments designed to probe our moral intuitions, we often find ourselves in highly unusual circumstances where those moral intuitions are arguably useless. One might respond that thought experiments are unusual and that they're simplified situations, but that's okay. That sort of thing can help illustrate general principles. And I suppose that's fine if your thought experiment is something like, imagine a frictionless plane, but for ethical thought experiments, I'm not against thought experiments in every area. Probing our intuition can be useful and interesting, and it's driven progress in mathematics and science, as well as areas of philosophy outside ethics. But probing our moral intuitions with a thought experiment is a bit different.
James Rachels has a classic thought experiment involving two people, Smith and Jones, and he's interested in, is there really a difference between actively killing somebody and letting them die? And so he sets up two precisely matched cases where the only difference is that in one case there's a killing and in another case, letting die. And most people think that, okay, yes, in that particular scenario you've constructed, there doesn't seem to be a moral difference between killing and letting die. But the question is, what follows from that? Does it follow that there's never a difference between killing and letting die? I think that's too hasty a thing to draw, and that very often context matters and there can be other principles which interact in complicated ways. And so that there's often a very deep set of questions, an important set of questions that we need to think about as philosophers about, well, how do you go from the simple case where things are clear to the real world case?
What exactly follows from an ethical thought experiment? If we establish that X or Y act is wrong in the thought experiment, have we demonstrated that it's always wrong to do X or Y? What inevitably follows from a thought experiment is some philosopher insisting that thought experiment A is like real-world situation B. But that doesn't follow. You're taking two scenarios that are not analogous and insisting that they are. It doesn't translate to a situation in the real world precisely because we've eliminated several details from the real-world scenario, and because we've often been given too much information, information that we wouldn't actually have. While we have less information in thought experiments than we do in the real world, in one big way, we have more information. We know a lot more about the consequences of our potential actions. If we push this fat man, the five people will be saved. If we continue to torture this boy, the city will continue thriving in prosperity. Many ethical thought experiments fall in this uncanny valley of too much information and not enough information. Relevant context and detail is eliminated, so there's a lack of information that would irritate and confuse anyone with expertise, and at the same time, there's too much information about the consequences of our actions. Those two points pretty much capture my problem with ethical thought experiments. The elimination of relevant information that we usually possess, and inclusion of different information that we don't ordinarily possess, renders many ethical thought experiments worse than useless. We have more information than we ordinarily would, and less information than we ordinarily would. And the end result is that we're talking about an alternate world that only exists in our minds. Again, this is fine in other areas of philosophy, but ethical philosophy is different. Some of it is supposed to guide our moral actions in our real lives. That's why the uncanny valley of simultaneous lack and inclusion of detail is a serious problem. When you invoke some thought experiment to adjudicate a real-world scenario, you're just taking two disanalogous situations and insisting that they are analogous. And I already know they're disanalogous before I know any more detail because one is a thought experiment and the other is the real world. Who knows what subtleties have been lost in the sanitized, idealized, depersonalized scenario? Additionally, there are some thought experiments that are so divorced from reality that it's hard to begin to list the problems with them. Once I was arguing with an antinatalist, and I pointed out that in addition to pain, there's this other thing called pleasure, which seems to be pretty foreign to most antinatalists. Life seems to be worth living to most of us, even though pain is terrible. There are good parts to life that seem to make life worth living. And his response was the following thought experiment. Imagine you were subjected to the worst pain imaginable for an hour, but that you'd enjoy the greatest pleasure imaginable for an hour afterwards. Would you take the deal? I explained that I was suspicious of thought experiments like this, that I was convinced that they confused more than they clarified, and that scenarios like his seemed too disanalogous to our lives to possibly be relevant. I asked him if we could keep our discussion to the real world, and he declined to continue speaking with me. Keep in mind, we were talking about whether or not we should continue the human species. We were discussing whether or not it's okay to have children. If you say to me it's immoral to have children, and I ask why, and you say, imagine someone offered to subject you to torture for an hour, but immense pleasure for an hour, who should be losing patience with whom? Given the radical conclusion being drawn, the relevance of the thought experiment is pretty important. And imagine if I had engaged. We'd still be sitting there an hour later, adding detail, removing detail, and the whole time we'd be talking about an imaginary world. One reason James Wilson's criticism of thought experiments appealed to me is because I'm some sort of utilitarian, as nearly everyone is, and philosophers love to conjure up ludicrous thought experiments to demonstrate that utilitarianism is false. What if everything was perfect, but it was only so because we were torturing a young boy in a dungeon, because we struck a deal with a wizard, apparently, who offered the town this devil's bargain. I would say that the fact they have to create a universe that does not exist to turn people against utilitarianism works against the point they're trying to make. But maybe I'm confused. I, perhaps naively, thought the aim of ethical philosophy was to figure out how to behave. You know, in real life. In this universe that we live in. So creating a scenario that would literally never occur in real life, in other words, a vast number of ethical thought experiments, is a pointless exercise. And some will try to defend thought experiments like the one of the tortured boy in the dungeon. They'll say, aha, it is like the real world because of X, Y, and Z. They're the prophet Nathan revealing to King David that the parable was really about him. But then we're just back to arguing over whether thought experiment A is like real world situation B. It's entirely possible to agree on the thought experiment and disagree in the real world situation, because these are essentially two different worlds. Philosophers tend to assume that thought experiments make ethical choices clearer by abstracting them, in other words, eliminating all context and creating a world that doesn't exist, but those with relevant expertise tend to see these abstracting moves as losses of clarity and relevant detail. All real-world problems arise in a context. There's always a history, and all the subtleties that come along with it. And this is one reason I take fiction to be a superior way to explore moral philosophy than traditional thought experiments. There's an inclusion of history, context, and human detail, so that the story is more easily translated to our lives. The power of myth is greater than the power of thought experiments.
I think that there are other sorts of techniques or ways of doing philosophy that don't rely so much on thought experiments. So, for example, you can look at very much richer cases. The use of literature is a good example. In that case, you have a world that's much more richly imagined. It's a world with real people, people often with history, people you can identify with and either sort of hate or love. And in doing so, you can get inside a philosophical problem, maybe about what love is or what sorts of things that we should regret, in a way that a thought experiment maybe never will be able to do.
Despite my criticism, I don't think thought experiments are entirely worthless. They've played an important role in the development of science and philosophy, and obviously math, but I think I can safely say they often fail to clarify a situation. I've heard debaters get so lost in the details of a thought experiment, which is not identical and may not even be analogous to the subject at hand, that they lose sight entirely of the actual subject of the debate. And I've also witnessed derailments like this in philosophy of mind, in the Kalam and fine-tuning arguments, and of course numerous debates in moral philosophy. It's especially in the latter case that I think we need a massive reduction in the number of thought experiments. Just argue about real life. You'll never run out of material. I think the resistance to speaking frankly about current events or real scenarios is simply because it's harder to do. It's harder to talk about torture in the real world, or Israel-Palestine, or abortion, than it is to dream up thought experiments that you claim are relevant to those issues. It's easier to create an imaginary world where there are no real stakes, where we have more information about the consequences of our actions than we actually would, and less information about all that annoying context. But what good does that do us? This is applied moral philosophy. Isn't it supposed to be practical at some point? I don't care what I should do in a world that I don't live in. Wilson concludes, quote, "Overall, ethical thought experiments are at best fallible ways of constructing simplified models that map rather imperfectly onto the world as we experience it. And thought experiments can distort as much as they illuminate. Responsible thinking requires calibrating our levels of credence to the reliability of our intellectual tools. Clearly, ethical thought experiments are not particularly reliable tools, but that's not to say we have other more reliable ones. Ethical thinking is hard, and even our best tools for doing it are not very good. Humility should be the watchword." End quote. Thank you for listening. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll talk to you next time.